Blog Talk Radio.
Still feeling the pain from exiting the womb of ignorance into a world designed to kill me at birth. I am protected. The Elder Council consisting of Grand Grand and Baba, Doc Jones and Mama Ya, Lucky Stormy and then Antwood and Geraldine, Doc Stovall, Sister Parsi and Brother DeVril, send forth the energy to make us feel our work is not in vain. Glory be unto their name, for they train us to adhere to the teachings of Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey,
mastergrio.com. As always, we want to send a strong black shout out to Sister
strong,
Jackie.
Real strong.
Real strong. Very strong. Khalil Muhammad strong. And giving us the opportunity as well as the responsibility and the pleasure of listening and learning with the people all at the same time. Big bro, what is the goings on?
Man, always the same goings on, brothers. Are trying to overthrow white supremacy, bro.
That's right. They say it's an uphill journey, but you got to keep climbing all the time. Yes, indeed.
Sure.
I mean, they have attacked us on every front, on every single front. And as we always say, well, unfortunately, we have another very important show to share with the people on this evening. We'll be speaking with Sister Nancy Lockhart. She's been doing a lot of work on behalf of Jamie and Gladys Scott. These two sisters were falsely accused of a crime that evidence showed that they did not commit it. Reeks of a setup, as usual, you know. And most of the time when we deal with these kind of cases, Big Bro, we're dealing with black men.
Mm-hmm.
But as Brother Malcolm said, we have to learn to fight for freedom on every front because we're being attacked on every front. Normally it's, you know, the black man that they want to get out of the household. But being that they have almost succeeded in making sure that every black family does not have a black man in the home, now it's time for them to break the family down completely by getting rid of that strong black woman.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. And we'll be speaking with Sister Lockhart, and I believe we will be speaking with Ms. Scott as well, the young lady's mother as well.
Okay.
And, I mean, the sisters just been doing some dynamite work, as our sisters normally do. They get locked into something, and, I mean, and it's like a pit bull when the sisters get their teeth into something. They're going to finish it from the rooty to the tooty. They're going to get it done.
That's right. That's right, bro.
And,
that's the beauty of a black woman there, bro.
Man, what you say? Yes, indeed. Their strength is their beauty, ain't it?
That's right. That's right, bro.
Yeah, praise Nat Turner. I want to read a piece of this. This is off of The Wrongful Conviction. America's Wrongly Convicted. And this is the work that the sister's doing, and this is off of that website. Says, 14 years ago in a small town, Forest, Mississippi, two young black women who are sisters were given a double life sentence. This sentence was for a crime in which they did not commit. The alleged crime was armed robbery of two black men. No one was killed or harmed during this alleged robbery. Three young black men confessed to the robbery. They also implicated that Gladys and me, Jamie Scott, were involved and participated in this crime. On December 24, 1993, Scott County Sheriff's Department arrested Gladys and me for armed robbery. This was the beginning of a real-life nightmare for everyone in our family, our parents, our children, and especially us. Our trial began on October 4, 1994. Gladys, 19, and I, Jamie, were 22 years of age. The three young men, called the Patrick men because they were related, threats and promises they chose to turn state evidence against Gladys and myself. These men were promised a lenient sentence in return for their testimony. So here we go again. You remember we spoke with, you know, the ACLU, and we were talking about the informant.
Yeah, use of confidential informants, yeah.
Right, right. So, and we, I mean, it's no secret how the pigs solve their crimes. I mean, it's very rare that the pigs actually do their own work. They just depend on the work of snitches. You know, do your own work,
exactly.
Pig. That's what you get paid for. I mean, if you're going to keep, you know, keep our people snitching and, you know, better yet, keep them lying, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least you can do is give them a part of your paycheck. And some of these snitches do get money, though.
Exactly.
You know, they do
exactly.
Debo these people into making up stories and going along with stories a whole lot of times. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's a simple fact. I mean, you know, if you're looking at doing some jail time and they're telling you that they're going to give you 10 to 15 years or 20 years for made-up charges or whatever, and they want you to corroborate their story with against someone else, I mean, it's a no-brainer on what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go to jail for 10 or 15 years. Even if they've done the crime, don't nobody want to go to jail for the time.
Right.
But if you're talking to somebody that they know that didn't have anything to do with this crime, and they say, okay, look, well, you're not the person that we really want. We really want these two people over here. So if you'll go along with this story, you'll get out scot-free. You know what I'm saying? But what they understand, the snitches themselves don't understand, is once you start snitching, you can't stop.
Exactly.
You know, so it's the same old case, man. We've seen and heard about this case over and over and over again. And as long as you have shows like 48 Hours, and as long as you have all these reality shows where people are singing like songbirds, man. Some giving credible information, some giving not so credible information, but. When you see how these things play out, it shows you that they really don't do any of their own work, and they're going to rely on the strong arm tactics, the good and bad cop tactics, the lie, well, I'll get you if I don't get them type of situations, man. And until our people start sticking together and dealing with their own issues inside of their own neighborhood. Like, we know that Bebe at the corner selling dope. You know, Bebe been selling dope for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But until we stand up in our own community and say, Bebe, you can't sell no dope in this community no more.
Right.
You got to go elsewhere. And then if he goes elsewhere, that community said you can't sell here, eventually he'll find him another line of work.
Yeah, exactly. 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 You're so correct on that. What we're going to do now, man, we've got both of the sisters on the line, it looks like. We're going to bring them on. Sisters, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful.
Well,
wonderful.
This is Nancy. Miss Roscoe, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. We really want to thank you all for sharing your evening with us here at Real Talk with Brothers Keeper. And my brother Yele is on the line, and I'm Jamalo. How are you, sisters?
Hey, sisters, how are you?
Good, how are you all?
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Doing just fine. Well, Mrs. Roscoe, that's your name, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I apologize. I called you Miss Scott earlier.
Yes.
I saw the name of the children. Well, I guess we'll start with the mother, if that's okay with Sister Lockhart.
Sure, sure.
Okay, okay. Mama, what's going on, sweetie?
Well, for one thing, my daughters, they were really just given an unfair sentence for a crime they did not commit. They have managed to destroy a whole family life. They have five children and four grandchildren now that I have been raising for 14 years. After raising six children of my own that's all grown. My daughters was accused of this robbery, and it was just basically set up by the police department because of hate for my husband. Mm. And three guys did the robbing and said that my daughters told them to do it. And out of the robbery, the boys say they got $9, $10, or $11. Mm. And for $9, $10, $11, my daughters were given a double life sentence with no chance of parole for 20 years. My daughters are literally dying in a jail, in a prison cell for nothing. The victims testified in open court that my daughters never robbed them, that they never took anything from them, that they never held a gun on them. But yet and still, because of our corrupted system against black people, my daughters are dying in a prison cell. And their children have been without mother or fathers for over 14 years, and the system won't do anything to correct it. No one is willing to say, well, we made an error, or this shouldn't have happened. It was just unhuman what happened to them. And it has caused me to live a very depressing life and a depressing life for their children. Because when their children tell people what happened to their mother, people can't believe it. They say, how could somebody get a double life sentence and they never touched a weapon, they never killed anybody, they never hurt anybody? And these girls had no criminal background whatsoever. Mm. But because of a hate for the Roscoe family, because they had did something to some of the white people in that town, they made an example out of my daughters to show what they could do with blacks whenever they got ready, and how they could cover up things and pass things along in the courts and stuff and get it hid up under the table where nobody even recognized to take time to read this to see what happened. And then the judge, he wouldn't overturn it because they were black, and he did not want to see them get out of it. So he did not even try to overturn it. Because it was, even if they were guilty, it was too much time for the crime, which they were not guilty because the men were robbed, testified in open court. Right. So where's the guilt? I just don't understand it. But it has caused me to live a miserable life. I am 63 years old, and I have five children here now and four grandchildren, nine people that I am basically responsible to help take care of off of a system. So it's just, I just don't understand how the courts could do this and get away with it. I just really don't understand it. And I'm looking for someone to help to make it public so they could come home. Because without a public outcry, they will die in that prison cell. They have been placed in a cell with people that have murdered, have killed, have abused. And my daughters never did anything criminal before in their lives. But because they carry the name Roscoe in that small town in Mississippi, that what got them two double life sentence, because the hate for the Roscoe name.
That is absolutely ridiculous and very, very believable when we look at the history of the United States of America.
Right.
People of America, Sister Lockhart, what is maybe a question for the mother, because as it goes public, they're going to wonder really what it was that their father was accused of doing that brought so much animosity toward his seeds.
Well, I could answer that for you. It wasn't really their father. It was their father's nephew. He turned an FBI informer against a high white sheriff that ran the whole town that was taking bootleg kickbacks in a dry county where alcohol was not permitted, but where the blacks sold alcohol, and the sheriff was paid off to let them know when the revenue men or anybody, in the government men or anybody that was coming into town. But the nephew decided that he was tired of paying the sheriff because the sheriff prices were going higher and higher. So when the nephew decided he was tired of paying the sheriff, he became a FBI informer and set the sheriff up to be caught. And that is why the Roscoe name in that small country town, white people hate it. Because of them, this man spent like, I think, maybe 5 years, 6 years in prison. Shortly after he got out of prison, this man died. And that put a blanket over the Roscoe name. And when they found out that my daughter's daddy was a Roscoe and we had moved there from Chicago, Illinois, then they figured that, hey, we're going to make an example out of them because we don't like the Roscoes no way. So anybody, any of the Roscoe family that came up before the courts got severe time. Anything a Roscoe got into, they were severely punished. Because you must understand, in this town, the white man runs this town. The white man word is the law. If you don't do what the white man say, you don't eat. You don't work. Your family don't live. And they keep everything undercover in this town where it can't really get out of the town for the public to really know what's going on in this town. And this was my husband's home. My home is Chicago, Illinois. I was born and raised there. This is my husband's home. My daughters were born in Chicago. They were, when they got there, they weren't used to the things that was happening there with the blacks and the whites. So my daughters weren't afraid to speak up for themselves. And so by that way, they considered them some smart niggers from up north. So they decided they would make an example out of them. But the hatred, it wasn't specifically for them. It was for the Roscoe family. And then my husband, he was involved with a lot of things that the white people didn't like. So they hated him and the girls. And they told him when this case first came up that if we can't get you, we will get your daughters. And that's exactly what happened.
And that wasn't the first time that they tried.
No.
The first time.
That was not the first time?
No, this is what the second time that stuck. The first time there was actually a robbery of a burger shack or something. Am I right, Ms. Roscoe?
Yeah, it's a restaurant.
A restaurant.
Yeah.
And some black men had robbed the restaurant. And they tried to get the two white women that owned the restaurant to say that Jamie and Gladys did that. But the women knew that. Jamie and Gladys worked. They had no prior convictions. The women liked Jamie and Gladys, and they would not lie on them. So that time did not work.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know the time frame. I don't remember the time frame. But when this came up, this, to everything that I can read and tell, was actually a fight. Jamie and Gladys were not involved in the fight. There were the Patrick boys who, you know, you read about a minute ago, Jamalo, and there were two other men. And what happened was the deputy sheriff said that this was a robbery. They concocted this story. They had the Patrick men who ranged in ages from 14 to 18 years old. And they wrote the statements before they came in, told them to sign the statements, and the 14-year-old, I think he might have been 15 years old by the time he got to court, later testified that he was told that if he did not sign that statement, he would be sent to Parchman Penitentiary to be made out of a woman. Now, this 14-year-old signed that statement that was prepared for him when he went in there. He did not read the statement, and he also signed it without an attorney present. Now, the transcripts state that $9, $10, or $11 was stolen. Jamie and Gladys were advised by the two attorneys that they had during the lower court trial not to testify for themselves. So nowhere in the transcript is there any testimony from the sisters. The state had 5 witnesses. Jamie and Gladys did not have any. There was one lady, and for some reason they tried to discredit her. The 5 witnesses were the people, you know, the victims of this alleged robbery, and then the 3 perpetrators. The 14-year-old testified that Jamie and Gladys had absolutely nothing to do with this crime. He testified that Jamie and Gladys did not hold the shotgun on the Duckworth men, on the 2 men that were allegedly robbed. And, you know, he told the truth. He was told that he needed to, you know, go on the witness stand and tell this lie for a plea deal because he would receive a lesser sentence. The lesser sentence would have been strong-arm robbery instead of armed robbery. Armed robbery held the double life sentence. Strong-arm robbery, I believe, was like up to 10 years or something. So all throughout the trial, Jamie and Gladys were advised not to testify for themselves. And all throughout the trial, everybody gave conflicting stories. So it was rather obvious in reading the transcripts that nobody was telling the same story. Everybody stated that Jamie and Gladys did not have anything to do with this, yet the jury still convicted them and gave them double life sentences.
Was it the mostly cracker jury?
It was an all-white jury. It was, I think it was one black on there that was an alternative jury. And I think on the day of the trial, he didn't even show up.
And so it
was
basically
white.
Was it the public defender?
No. These were 2 private attorneys. But every time they tried to make a motion, anything that they did was pretty much denied. For instance, one of the witnesses had a criminal record. Everybody had a record, actually. Even the 14-year-old had been in some juvenile problems. And one had a felony record. The attorney for Jamie Scott had requested that his record be produced. You know, he had requested that in production, he requested this record. And from what I read, he did it in a timely fashion. Well, that morning of the trial, he stated that he had no idea that this man had a criminal record, which included robbery and drunk driving, you know, that kind of thing. Let's see. Pretty much after the trial, they were convicted, and they got another attorney. And the attorney, the appellate attorney, was Attorney Shakwe Lumumba, and he did their appeal. Of course, it was denied. And then he brought forth new evidence. The new evidence was the post-conviction relief. And that was, of course, denied. The new evidence showed that there were 3 affidavits. All affidavits stated that Jamie and Gladys did not have anything to do with this crime. One of the affidavits is from a lady who was in the local holding jail with some of the quote, perpetrators of the crime. And she overheard several stories of them talking about how bad they felt with the sisters receiving these double life sentences and that they had absolutely nothing to do with the crime. Another affidavit was actually from one of the witnesses who stated that Jamie and Gladys had nothing to do with this crime. They were not even with them. Okay. The third affidavit that I feel is extremely important was given by a gentleman who was a trustee at the local jail. In this affidavit, he states that the 2 deputy sheriffs took some trustees, I think about 10 trustees, out to the location of this nightclub. This happened during the hours that a nightclub was closed, and that they were ordered to look for a wallet. They found the wallet. The wallet had three $20 bills in it. They were instructed not to repeat the fact that they found the wallet out there. And I also would like to back up and bring to the attention that during this trial, no evidence was submitted. There was no wallet during the trial as evidence, and there was no shotgun during the trial as evidence, okay?
Yeah.
And we
so what backs up? What backed up the statement of a shotgun and a wallet if
nothing
it was not in the evidence?
Honestly, nothing. Nothing that I have read anywhere, and I promise you, I know I have read those transcripts 50 times at least. Nothing backs it up because that evidence was not brought into the court. If they had brought that, my opinion is if they had at least brought that wallet in, they would have found that it did not have Jamie and Gladys's DNA on it, or no fingerprints on it, okay? So the other thing that comes to my mind is if the money was still in the wallet when the trustees found it, how in the world could there have been a robbery?
Right, that's what I was just about to ask, and if it was $60 found in the wallet, where did the story of $11 come up?
Okay. That story came up from the 14-year-old said $9, $10, or $11 was found in the wallet. Before he was on the witness stand, another gentleman had testified that he had about $230, I believe he said, Ms. Roscoe. Was that right?
Yes.
And so everybody had a different amount of money.
One
okay,
didn't have any money.
Exactly. On the witness stand, I mean, everybody was, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any money. Okay, so anyway, everything that was tried was denied. The sisters, you know, pretty much just are sitting there. I heard about this case. Ms. Roscoe, I have to commend because she wrote everybody. She would not give up. I mean, she wrote everybody that she could think of writing about this. I happened to be at the right place at the right time, I guess I should say, when I heard about it. She had been writing for 11 years. I was working as a student employee at Rainbow Push Coalition in Chicago. She stated that she had written Push for 11 years with no response. This time she changed her strategy and she sent the letter to Congressman Jackson's office and asked that he get it to his father's organization. That was how I got the letter. I opened the letter, I read it, and I had to just immediately call her. And from there, she got a relative in Chicago to bring the transcripts. I read through the transcripts. I had some professors around the Chicago area to look at the case. I had to make sure, you know, that I felt in my heart this was the truth.
Yeah.
So long story short, I guess, I was convinced that this was the truth. I ended up graduating, and I left with the desire to continue to try to help. Now, during that time, when nobody did anything about the case, I ran into a prominent civil rights attorney judge who had talked to me about the case, and I really felt that this was smooth sailing. Well, he was very interested in the case. He had started researching it himself, looking into ways to maybe even bring this back to court or try to get their relief.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I didn't hear from him anymore. Ms. Roscoe had told me, she said, Nancy, people hear about this, they say they're going to help, and then they stop. Okay, that ran through my mind. But I must say that this gentleman didn't stop. He got very ill, and he passed away. So when that happened, we just had to try to redirect the strategy. And that strategy is to make this case public. We have a blog site, which, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention.
Please do.
It's freejamieandgladysscott.blogspot.com. That's FREEJAMIEANDGLADYSCOTT. Only one S, not an S in Gladys and an S in Scott, but only one S, .blogspot.com. That's Free Jamie and Gladys, GLADYSCOTT, .blogspot.com. And we're just looking for people to assist us. They really need an attorney that would not mind volunteering some services, that may be able to review some new laws that might be out there or whatever. I don't know. I'm not an attorney. We also need volunteers to help spread the word. My goal is to make the wrongful conviction of Jamie and Gladys Scott a household word. And I must say that I am not overlooking other wrongful convictions. I'm not overlooking Mumia Abu-Jamal. I'm not overlooking the Angola 3 or the Angola 1 who's left down there in Louisiana. I'm not overlooking, you know, any of the other people, but we do need desperate help in this. They've been in the prison in Mississippi for 14 years now on a double life sentence. They come up for parole in, I think it's 2014. They do not need to sit there and wait to hear that parole is denied.
Yeah.
And this is just a plea for assistance. Also, another thing that's needed that could be done on the blog spot is donations are needed.
Okay.
Whenever there are organizations that might express an interest or people who might express an interest, transcripts have to be copied and mailed, and it's expensive. The transcripts are about 180-some pages, which is, I know, not a whole lot of pages compared to some transcripts. And then there's postage, and it gets to be a very expensive thing. What we hoped, one thing we hoped for was a video that could be broadcast on like YouTube and, you know, some of the, I think, Vox or wherever on the Internet. We had hoped that something like that could be done. I have been calling the commissioner's office in Mississippi to try and obtain permission for a media interview, and that was denied. And I have since written a letter to the commissioner to request that they allow, under their state statute, a media interview, and I haven't gotten a response back, you know, from them yet. Also, Jamie and Gladys, there's a new law in the state of Mississippi that is called the Early Parole Release Law or statute. Jamie and Gladys were not sentenced under that statute. If they had been, they could go to the parole board now for a parole hearing to try and get early parole release. But because they were not, the governor of Mississippi would have to grandfather them into that statute. We're sort of waiting to hear what the result of that will be. Of course, they do not want to come out on parole because that's admitting guilt. But after being in the penitentiary for 14 years, you know, they would be very happy to get out the way that they can. And I must say that they have not wasted their time in there either. They have both studied and, you know, they've taken classes. Whatever is offered, you know, they've done it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good that they're, you know, making some type of efforts in there to, you know, just keep themselves occupied from this tragedy. What exactly were they accused of? I know, you know, they were accused of the crime. That's evident. What was said that they actually did? I mean, that, you know, they make up a whole fantastic lie. You know, they jumped out the car and put guns to somebody's head, or, you know, or they just said they were there.
Okay, well, what happened was they left the house one evening to see about getting some fuel, some heating fuel. This was around Christmas, like the 23rd, I think, of December in 93. And they stopped at a mini mart or a fast, you know, a stop and go or whatever. And when they came out of, they couldn't find the person that stole the fuel. And I don't know if you all realize it's kind of common when you live in the country that you can go to the fuel guy's house to get fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I had someone say to me, well, what were they doing going, you know. So anyway, they had done that. They couldn't locate the gentleman. They stopped at the stop and go, and their car would not crank. After their car would not crank, they saw, was it some of the Patrick Boys, Miss Roscoe?
No, it was Duckworth and Hayes, the men that were robbed.
Okay.
They saw them and they gave them a ride. Yes.
And they went down this road, and for lack of trying to give you a drawn-out story, they went down this road, and one of the men got fresh with one of the sisters, and the sisters got out and walked. And they walked back home that night. And they have a witness who knows that they walked back home. Now, when they walked home, obviously after they had left, there had been this trumped-up robbery, which we all believe was the fight between two separate cars of people.
Mm. Oh. Man, this is
absolutely, and it's like we say, it's not unbelievable.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and we've heard these type of stories over and over and over again. And I wanted to comment on something the sister said, you know, as to where she's not overlooking other cases. And don't let people run that type of thing on you, because most of us have been tricked into doing absolutely nothing. And then when someone does bring something to the forefront, well, what about this? Well, what about that? You know,
exactly.
What I'm saying? If everyone just picked at least one battle to fight, there's enough of them going around.
Sure.
Exactly.
You know, so pick one and stand up for it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so we do really want to commend Mama Roscoe on her strength and her perseverance.
Exactly.
And also Sister Lockhart, you know, on your strength and perseverance in fighting voluntarily for these sisters. And another thing she said, Big Bruh, and I want you to kind of comment on it as well. She said that Mama wrote letters to a lot of organizations to no avail.
Mm-hmm.
And I just go on to put it out there. We have to stop supporting these Porch Monkey Negro organizations who have gotten our support through trickery and deceit, as if they really work in the name of the people, and they don't.
Hallelujah.
Exactly. And like I said, you got to call a spade, bro.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, you know, if these organizations who come in every year for this banquet or these donations, and they're telling you to join this and join that, and they're not fighting adamantly for the people in the community, then we need to stop supporting these. We need to stop supporting these organizations. We need to stop supporting these church organizations that are draining the community dry and not doing anything for the community.
Hmm.
When stuff like this happens, there needs to be such an outcry in the black community that it cannot be denied.
Yes.
But as long as we don't say anything and we allow these things to go on, then this is exactly what's going to happen. It may be the Scott daughters today. It may be my sons tomorrow. It may be your daughters the day after. if we don't start letting the people know that we're not going to tolerate our babies being locked up like this. You know, we know that the prison industrial complex gets 50,000 right about now, $50,000 a year per inmate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to see my sons go anywhere, just like this mother didn't want to see her daughters go anywhere. But as long as the people know, as long as these white folks know that they can do what they want to do and get away with, then they're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to start standing up. And we as black people are going to have to get up under these bourgeois Negroes and the NAACP and all the rest of these no good, nothing organizations for the black community and say either you're going to do right or you ain't going to do it all.
That's right. That's right.
That's what has to happen.
If you want to, you can put them on blast.
Yes.
Yeah, you can go on put them on blast on this show if you want to. I mean, that's up to you.
And Ms. Roscoe, Ms. Roscoe contacted all those organizations. When I sat there and I read that letter, I was distraught. And I read hundreds of letters, okay? But somehow deep in my heart, I knew that this lady was telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not understand how somebody could write for 11 years and not get a response. I felt she at least needed a response.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, and afterwards, I mean, she's written everybody, Montel Williams, Oprah, I mean, everybody. Everybody she has written. And then some of them that she told me about, I turned around and wrote them again thinking, well, it's a different year, a different season. You know, maybe they will respond. But the sad thing about this tragic case is Mr. Roscoe moved the family to Chicago hoping for a better life, and this is according to Jamie. And he had no idea what awaited them in rural Mississippi. He died. He died of a broken heart from a heart attack with his daughter still in prison.
And he paid out, Jamal, I would like to say, too, and my husband paid out a lot of money to attorneys at the time with other family members' help. And these were black attorneys that didn't do their jobs. I felt like the attorneys on my daughter's case did not do their jobs. I feel like they just took money. And I also joined the ALCU. I was a member. They promised to help me. They wrote 48 hours, one letter, and the man and the head of the program never did get an answer. He didn't write anymore. He didn't pursue it anymore. All he wanted me to do was join that group and get my membership. And what the other guy said about these black groups, that money has been donated to fight for black people, that money is going into their pockets. And black people are study dying in prison. And children's lives are being destroyed because of stuff like this. Like I say, I have five grandchildren, five kids Jamie and Gladys have, and four grandchildren. These grandchildren never even got a chance to spend a night with their mothers. And then when you talk to the children, other children talk to them at school, when they tell the children that their mother got a double life sentence, they say, who did your mother kill?
Right.
The kids say, my mother never touched anyone. My mother never even touched a gun. In the court transcript, the men that were robbed testified. When they asked them, did Jamie Scott take any money from you? The men said no. When they said, did Gladys Scott take any money from you? The men said no. When they asked, did Jamie pull a gun on you? The men said no. So why are my girls dying in a prison cell when all these black organizations out here could get them out? It's just unfair. And it angered me so bad. It angered me because these kids have to live off a system where they give them $101 and say that is enough for me to take care of them. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Every black organization ought to step up to the plate and bring stuff like this into the public eye. All these black organizations ought to be behind getting these girls out of here so they could come home to their children.
That's right.
It is ridiculous. A lot of people hear this case, Jamal, they don't believe it's true. But Nancy did her investigation, and she saw everything I told her was true. My daughters are dying for nothing, for not even touching a weapon, taking money, doing nothing. So what? Why are they dying? Why are they in the prison cell?
Yeah.
And you know, it's ridiculous.
They didn't have any prior. No prior.
And they didn't have no criminal backgrounds whatsoever. Whatsoever. They didn't have any criminal background. But because of hate in that town, for the Roscoe family, because of what my husband and nephew did, and for a lot of things that my husband was involved in, too, around with the, you know, the bootlegging and different things, they decided to make an example out of these girls. And that's exactly what they did. And they showed how they could do things and get past the appeal courts, past the judges, past everybody.
It's a good old boy system.
Yeah.
And
it's
judge,
a good old boy system.
Yeah, and the judge that was on my daughter's case that could have overturned the jury's decision, he refused to overturn it. He was the same judge that was on the case in 1964 when the three civil rights workers got killed and were buried in a dam in Philadelphia, Mississippi. This is where that judge lived. He is a known member from people in the community to be a KKK.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were down in Philadelphia, so we know exactly the judge you're talking about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
right.
Jamie, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sister.
Go ahead, Nancy, because I get upset and I can't stop talking.
That's okay. Jamie had written something for me, and I wanted to read part of it.
She says,
my name is Jamie Scott, and I have asked Nancy to post this on different websites that she and others have created for me and my sister. I do understand that there are many people out there that don't understand a lot about prison and what someone goes through in a situation such as this. Please don't get me wrong. If you commit a crime, you should be punished. In the state of Mississippi, the crime chart is just crazy. I have met so many women here that their husbands were beating the living mess out of them, and these ladies have taken legal actions against their husbands, but as soon as she tries to stop him from killing her, she takes his life, she comes to prison. But keep in mind, they still do not receive two life sentences. Men are here for the brutal rape of children and women, but yet they don't have double life. When I entered prison at the tender age of 22, I felt like my world was coming apart and life was not living. One bad part about the entire situation is the women I have encountered. I met this woman who told me she was driving down the highway and her baby would not stop crying. She stopped and threw her baby over the bridge. Guess what? She left me here. She has gone home. So many have killed their own children, but none have received the amount of time that my sister and I have received. I truly believe that I would have come out better if I had committed a crime of murder. I have never been one to judge someone, and that is why so many people come to me and share their thoughts. I must admit sometimes I get so angry when it involves a child. I get angry with the Mississippi judicial system because here my sister and I sit with double life, and this person took an innocent child's life.
Mm-hmm.
I won't read all of that, but then she goes on to say, I know that God is only keeping her alive. Oh, in the midst of all the hurt I have endured, nothing could prepare me for the times I went on funeral detail. My sister and I had to go to the funerals of our grandfather, grandmother, father, and sister. And I just like to add, Ms. Roscoe's oldest daughter died this summer. They buried her this summer. My sister, who died on my birthday, shackled like dogs. When I think of the word strongest, I think of my mother. She is 4 feet 9 inches tall and has the strength of Job in the Bible. There were six of us children. Now there are five. None of us have ever seen an angry day from her. My mother would only make sure that we had and never had to go begging. I know that it's only God that keeps her alive. And I would like to, and she goes on to say that Miss Roscoe had to bury her husband and soulmate of 30 years, and, you know, she has to endure all of this. Now, she also goes on to say that some might say that we only care about money. Let me set those of you who think that straight. In other words, she's just explaining that she's not looking for money to get out of prison. They just want to get released. Now, one more thing I need to include. Mr. Lumumba was the appeals attorney. I contacted him about 4 years ago, so he was pretty familiar with what I was trying to do back when I was in Chicago. I talked to him some more times, and I recently spoke with him, well, this fall, and I have to give him credit in the fact that he did a whole lot of this investigations himself. He included all of that in the files. He kept the files. I don't know what the law is in the state of Mississippi. Most attorneys do not keep a file for 12 years. He came on the scene at 12 years, although they were in their 14, but he came on. So most attorneys will not keep those files that long. He kept those files, and he released those files so that something else, you know, could try to be done about this case. My thought is, I don't care who the attorney was on this last go-round, and I'm not talking about the first two. I don't care who the attorney was. I think that this was just, as Ms. Roscoe stated, a setup, and that no matter what the outcome, they were going to see that these girls got double life sentences. And this is double life each, not one sister with one life sentence. Each sister got double life.
Mm-hmm. I know some people that have killed two or three people here in the city of Memphis and ain't got double life.
Yeah, didn't get one life.
Didn't get one life. I mean, three, maybe 6 years. One got 10. Both of them out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is absolutely a gross miscarriage of justice.
It's a very miscarriage of justice. It's so bad to really have destroyed me mentally. I fight because I love my children and I love my grandchildren. And I refuse to see the system just get away with this. That's why a public outcry needs to be made. It needs to be made at full force to let people see how a lot of these black organizations are not helping their own. They are doing nothing but money, 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 and they are not helping. Every organization in this country ought to be behind Jamie and Gladys because here's girls sitting in prison that ain't even killed nobody.
Yeah.
So how could they be sitting there? It's crazy. It's real crazy. And it caused me to have a lot of sleepless nights on severe depression medicine, and it's causing Gladys to be on depression medicine too. Gladys' mind is going to waste in prison. She is getting mentally and mentally more disturbed every time I get a chance to talk to her on the phone. And I heard that they're giving her some kind of psychotic medicine that's making her worse. So they're killing them and making them rot in a prison cell. Jamie won't take the medicine. Jamie won't take her aspirin because she's scared they may give her something that will really hurt her. But by Gladys being in the state of mind she's in, Gladys is not as strong as Jamie. Gladys' mind is weak, and she's weakened over the years, and she takes all the medication they give her for depression and stuff, and I notice a change in her. My daughter is not going to live long, and I feel this in my heart because I see the way she is whenever I get a chance to talk to her. It's like she's in another world, like they are killing her with the medication and the prison cell. So what we are asking for, Jamel, is for a public outcry. We are asking y'all to help two black sisters that were wrongly convicted and shouldn't be allowed to die in a cell when they could be here with their children, finish raising them.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And there are a whole lot of people listening to our show every Tuesday night. And also, we do send this show out to at least about 12,000 people after every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Lockhart, did I give you the number to a couple of black publications in Memphis?
No, you didn't.
Okay.
Could you email those to me?
Yes, ma'am, I surely will, and I'll contact them as well and try to get them to print a story on this. And
thank
you.
I've written a couple of articles. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, go ahead.
I've written a couple of articles. One is The Poor Are Enslaved in American Prisons, and that was printed by Dissident Voice. But they're all on the blog spot. It's http://freejamieandgladysscott, and that's Gladys Scott with one S, .blogspot.com. And a couple of other articles too, but they're all on that blog spot. And also, donations are really needed. It's very expensive. And, you know, people come up and say, well, have you contacted the Innocence Project? Well, yes, the Innocence Project has been contacted. Jamie and Gladys contacted the Innocence Project when the New Orleans Project was handling Mississippi cases. Now there is a new project at Oxford Law School in, I guess that's in Oxford, Mississippi, and they have not gotten a reason as to why they won't handle this case. I can only assume that it's because no DNA. There's no DNA because there was never any robbery. There was never any gun. There was never any wallet other than the wallet that they found at the fight. So, you know, we desperately need an out, you know, like Ms. Roscoe said, we need help. All I know how to do is write and, you know, send out emails and that kind of thing. We need someone, we need an attorney. An attorney needs to get interested in this, and not an attorney that's looking for $150,000, $200,000. I have had attorneys tell me, oh, that'll take $200,000. Are you going to pay it? Well, I'm about as able to pay it as much as Ms. Roscoe is able, as much as Jamie and Gladys are able to pay it in the prison.
Yeah.
Nobody has that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, we only have 2 minutes remaining. You all are welcome to come back on the show if you would like to. I mean, early as next week if you all want to. And that's just a door that's open for you all as well. And we do have other people on the station who have a different listening crowd, and we can definitely get you in touch with them and get you all some interviews as well. And
thank you.
Very quickly before we go off the air, if you will, let the because they do need donation money. And if you will email me a P.O. box, I'll be sure tomorrow, because we don't deal with credit cards or anything like that.
Okay.
If you email us a, you know, P.O. box or something, we'll be sure to, you know, send you some type of donation. And let the people know where they can donate to you again, and leave any information, you know, as far as getting in touch with you through email or through whatever means of contacting you. Leave that with the people.
Thank you. Okay. Post Office Box 389, Green Pond, that's two words, South Carolina, 29446. And the email address is thewrongfulconviction@gmail.com.
Okay.
And we
and what
thank
is the blog spot again?
The blog spot is http://. Free Jamie and Gladys Scott, that's with one S, .blogspot.com. Free Jamie and Gladys, G-L-A-D-Y-S-C-O-T-T, blogspot.com.
Can they make donations at that at the blogspot?
Yes, they sure can.
Okay, okay. Well, we thank you all for sharing your time with us, and you know, we know an hour is not going to be enough to solve this problem, but hopefully someone will hear who will be able to assist us in getting these sisters free. And we have to do this. We have to do this. We can no longer allow the United Snakes of America to separate black homes like they
Mr.
have.
Jamal, may I say one more thing before you go off?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
The bad thing about this is that my oldest son is in the military. He has been in the military for 20 years. He just came back from Iraq, where he's been stationed in Iraq for 2 years. My son is in Iraq, was in Iraq, risking his life for a country that took his sisters. And I would just like people to know that.
Ain't that something? Horrible, horrible. And the shocking thing is as horrible as this situation is, I'm not surprised by any of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just horrible. That the United States has a history. I mean, like the sister spoke of earlier, when you think of brothers like Mumia Abu-Jamal, H-Rap Brown, the years that Brother Geronimo Pratt did, the Africa family still locked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got a whole lot of work to do. We've got a whole lot of work to do. And the show is no longer live, but it is streaming. So when you go into archives, they will be able to hear, you know, the ending comments and everything, what we're saying now. And,
okay, and we thank you for being here. We thank you for letting us come on the program. And thanks for being here.
Oh, not at all. The problem.
Always
open can
door.
Do, we will.
Always.
And please,
it's always an open door.
Well, and please, would y'all please do anything y'all can to help my daughters? Any kind of way y'all can, whatever y'all can do, anything that will get them free. Please try to help us.
Mama, you got that and more. We're gonna try to do everything in our power to assist you. And Mama, I just want to let you know that I know it's tough. I know it's got to be hard for you, but we just got to hold on and keep being strong and keep fighting. That's all we can do. You know, it's a hard situation.
Yes, I will fight till I die. I will go to my grave fighting to free my daughters.
And you're supposed to, my man. We're going to help you. We're going to help you fight the whole way, too.
Thank you. Thank you so
Someone
much.
Someone just emailed, and they're going to PDF the transcripts. That's great.
Okay.
This
Good.
Is great. Thank you.
Good.
Wonderful. Good. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. Well, you all are more than welcome to come on again next Tuesday if you like. And in the meantime, in between time, I'm going to be getting with some of our comrades who also have these shows and hook up a series of interviews for you all, because everyone pretty much has a different listening audience, and this word needs to be out. So whatever we can do, we will do, and we mean that.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. Y'all stay up now.
And we thank you all for tuning in with Real Talk with Brothers Keeper every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and let's definitely get our boots on and get in the field and help these sisters get free. And if you choose not to fight that battle, pick something.
Exactly.
You know, don't just be one of these satisfied Negroes just because we have a black president elect. Don't get it twisted. Barack Obama is not going to free these sisters. We have to work for our people on our own and let him
exactly.
do the job that he was chosen to do or whatever that may be. But we have to do the work for ourselves. We have to help ourselves. We have to feed ourselves. We have to work for ourselves.
That's
so,
right.
So let's get off of our couches. Let's release the remote control. And let's even get off of the Internet. You know, we have a whole lot of Internet revolutionaries who send out emails and everything and go home, and that's it on that. That, you know, we think we've accomplished something, but we have to get out in the field and get these boots muddy.
Right.
And, we thank you all for tuning in with Real Talk with Brothers Keeper, and we'll be back on next Tuesday. Any last words, big bro?
Man, I love y'all, and y'all keep on fighting a good fight.
Thank you. Both of you.
Indeed. Black Power. We'll be right back next Tuesday, 8 o'clock, Real Talk with Brothers Keeper. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.